Yes, I have. But if you do this, if you just give me options, I'll be able to do this. I'm talking about this for you. Now, if you will remember, we are doing this part of the Rambam, where the Rambam comes down to, well, the best would be, if you will look, you'll see there is a sort of window insertion.
Look at the page, it has now V in the top right hand corner.
This is page 4. Page 4, there is a Tzogus Horaibed, a sort of little V, a sort of little window in the page. Now, if you take, before the short lines begin, the middle of the line above the last, the Eluhem Gedolei HaChachomim Shehoyu Beveis Dino Shel Rabbeinu HaKodesh VeKiblu Mimenu. Have you got that?
No.
Okay, I got it. Got it. The middle of the last line but one. Martin, have you got it? Selvin, have you got it? Now, what we are doing here is the Rambam started from Moshe Rabbeinu and he worked down. Mary Pines first. The Rambam started from Moshe Rabbeinu and he worked down from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua to the judges, right down. He worked it down and he got as far as Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. That's the second half of the second century of the Common Era. That's between 150 and a bit more. You can say it's between 170 and 210 of the Common Era. So you've got a good idea when it is. Now that is Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. So, and these were the Gedolei HaChachomim Shehoyu Beveis Dino Shel Rabbeinu HaKodesh VeKiblu Mimenu, and they received the guardianship of the Torah from him, and also the Torah Shebaal Peh. They received the Torah Shebaal Peh from Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, and also the guardianship of the Torah Shebaal Peh, that they were the authorities that were in charge of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So we've got Shimon the Gamliel Bonov, these Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Gamliel, these were the two sons of Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, and then we've got a number of others, Rabbi Ethes, Rabbi Hanino ben Chamo, Rabbi Chio, Rav, Rabbi Yanai, Ubar Kapore, Ushmuel, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbeinu Hashayo. So you've got, he left really 10 very important Talmidim. You will notice, if you remember from the others, that we've never got a parcel of 10 that we're dealing with. We've got 1, 2 at the most. All of a sudden we are faced with a parcel to of 10. But the next 2 lines or so are also significant. He says, "Ve'eluhem gedolei hachachomim shekiblu mimenu." These are the great ones who received from him. There were others also. And now come the words, "Ve'imohem alofim urevovos mishor chachomim." Together with them were thousands and tens of thousands of other chachomim. Got it? So here we come to a rather significant period in the history of Torah, because this is a make or break period. This is the time of the Romans. The Bar Kokhba rebellion was in 135. So the Kokhba rebellion was just about 20 years before this is taking place. And now the Romans have clamped down, and there is the great fear that the Torah will be forgotten. Now, when it says the Torah will be forgotten, a Sonsina there could also always be. A Sonsina translation of the Talmud, that there was no danger that that would be forgotten. That there would always be. But the understanding of the Torah, what it was all about, there was a great fear that that would be forgotten. And the whole Torah Shebal Peh and all that would be forgotten. And here we... So, this is the parting of the ways. And... So, this is the parting of the ways. And from here, two forks go out. One Babylon and one Eretz Yisrael. And in Babylon, the foundations are laid for the Talmud Bavli, for the Babylonian Talmud, and in Eretz Yisrael, the foundations are laid for the Palestinian Talmud. So you've got the... And this is the point of divergence. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Hoshaya are the ones that are responsible mainly for the finalizing of the Palestinian Talmud. So we rather on a very, very, we're skating here from the Torah point of view on very thin ice. Afar pi, says the Rambam, She'elu ha-yud aleph, although these 11, Kiblu v'rabbeinu ha-kodesh v'omdu b'midrasho, although they all received from Rabbi Yehuda ha-nosi, and they learnt in his base medrash, Rabbi Yochanan Kotten Hoyo, the Achaken Hoyo Talmid le Rabbi Yone be Kibu Mimene Tero. Rabbi Yochanan was the youngest of them all. It was possible he was in his early teens. He might only have been 13 or 14. He was the youngest of all, and he was very young when Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi died. So he continued under Rabbi Yanai, who was also one of the disciples of Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi. Why it is so important for the Rambam to mention Rabbi Yochanan is because Rabbi Yochanan was to the Palestinian Talmud what Rabino and Rav Ashi was to the Babylonian Talmud. He was a very important personage for the Palestinian Talmud. So, the Rambam makes a lot of it. V'chein Rav kibel mirabi Yanai, u'Shmuel kibel mirabi Chanino bar Chamo. Rav and Shmuel, although they were also the disciples of Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, were amongst the younger ones. And what happened was that at the death of Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, some of the older, the senior Talmidim took over, and some of the younger Talmidim still continued their studies under the older Talmidim, and then Rav and Shmuel went across to Babylon and started the great schools in Babylon. So you've got some of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi stayed in Eretz Yisrael, and some of them went over to Babylon.
I understand. I'm thinking now, because I studied in Brachot about this student, one who isn't mentioned here, Shimon Breslakis,
yes.
who I understand that this going to Babylon was not free of controversy, because he makes two statements. One, he does not understand. He had heard that people lived to an old age in Babylon. He doesn't understand how Hashem allows this.
And the second thing that he tells them, that because of your ancestors who did not come back with Ezra Nehemiah, the temple was destroyed. So in other words, there was opposition in the community to somewhere in the community then to this going to Babylon. In other words, it was not free of controversy.
Yes, it was. That is correct. But don't forget what the position was in those days. They were still in Eretz Israel. The temple was destroyed already 100 years
and
earlier.
Yeah.
100 years earlier. They were hoping that things would improve, but things didn't improve, and things got considerably worse, as we are still going to see in the Rambam.
Historically, we see that those who went were right, but at the time it was not obvious.
Of course. But then we've got a situation in reverse, where things become so strong in Babylon that it was questionable whether they should go back to Eretz Yisrael several hundred years later.
Yes.
Now this is the very important thing to remember, and that is that we believe, and there are Gemaras and Chazal to this effect, that there is always a Makom Torah. There's always one place to which the Torah has been exiled. Whether this, so first of all, it went to Yavne, went to Usha, it went to Babylon, North Africa, Spain, south of France, Germany, and then went Eastern Europe. And apropos of that, I'm going to tell you something that was told to me before Hitler came into power. And that was that Reb Chaim Volozhin, now this must have been 150 years ago, he was the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva. And the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva was a very important step. He was one of the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon had the select Talmidim. Reb Chaim Volozhin was one of the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, and he was the one who founded and was the first head of the yeshiva in Volozhin. And that yeshiva in Volozhin was the prototype of the yeshivas that followed, and they followed all in the Gaon's footsteps. And it meant a tremendous amount, because once you get back to the Vilna Gaon, you know that you are already in line of the Rishonim, and that there is a direct line that comes down. Now, Reb Chaim Volozhin said, and this goes back to close to 200 years, Reb Chaim Volozhin said, then they found him crying once they came in. It was in the middle of the night. They came in, they found him weeping, and they asked him what was the matter. He said he worked out for them how many countries, the number of countries to which the Torah had been exiled, and he said that there would be a total of 10 exiles before the return to Eretz Israel. Now this is at least 150 years ago, and this was told to me before Hitler came to power. Hitler came to power in April 1933, just the beginning.
He worked out 10 more times at the expo, 10 altogether?
10 altogether. He said that Eastern Europe was the ninth. And if you would kindly hold your breaths for a moment, and the 10th would be the United States of America. Now, even when this was told to me, and it was told by a very, very reliable source, it comes down absolutely directly, to me. When this was told to me, this was absolutely mad. And it was told to me because I was deciding then to what yeshiva to go to in Eastern Europe. And it was suggested to me that I should go to Mira Yeshiva because there were a number of Americans there. And they felt that I would feel at home there, being Americans, language the same, think we sort of I'd be able to fit in. And this was taking me in that connection. One of the Americans who were there in those days was Rabbi Avigdor Miller, who is now in New York. He was one of those. And this is the story of Canada, that the 10th would be America. But when it was told to me, it sounded ridiculous. It sounded absurd. And you see what has happened now. Right.
The last place to go is the
next place to get back to the
where's it? Somehow come considered. Where's somehow come considered now?
That's according to him.
Now he wants to know it on further. This is an idea with the damage.
This is according to him, this is America. Whether how long
I think of Rav Kook or Rabbi Maimon or Rabbi Shalom or Yibadiel HaChaim, Rabbi Gordon would think differently today.
Well, you know,
or I'm not Rabbi.
One has to be very careful of tendentious statements. Mm-hmm. And of course there are many tendentious statements being made today. Mm-hmm. Today, all of a sudden, in Israel, they are pushing the study of the Palestinian Talmud.
In Yeshivot?
Yes. Well, not in Yeshivot, in certain places. And it's a tendentious move because it's not in the Golas, it's to back up the nationalism.
Is this Chief Rabbi, you think this is rabbinic policy to push the?
Well, it's certainly not a Vayi Yosef policy.
It certainly wouldn't be Shlomo Gorton policy either.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
It may be people.
But there is this sort of tendency, which is dangerous. Because our tradition has been, whether you are Sephardi or Ashkenazi, the tradition has been, you first gain a mastery over the Babylonian Talmud. And when you gain the mastery over the Babylonian Talmud, then you go to the Palestinian Talmud. The Palestinian Talmud is all the arguments that one gets, the debates that one gets in the Babylonian Talmud, you don't get all that in the Palestinian Talmud. Right. Now, so I've told you this apropos of why the Rambam here halts and sort of takes you round into the bipod and points these out to you, whereas until now he came straight down. Now he says, "Ve'elu hem gedolei hachachomim shekibu mehem v'yimom ha'alofim v'rvovos v'shar hachachomim." He says there were thousands and tens of thousands. "Achal pi she'elu ha'yud alef kiblu b'rabbeinu ha'kodesh v'omdu b'midroshev." Although these 11 received from Rabbeinu HaKodesh and they burned in his Beis HaMidrash, Rabbi Yochanan Koton Hoyo. Rabbi Yochanan was the youngest. Va'achakach Yotam in Rabbi Yamna Mevekibel Mimenu Tero, Vechein Rav Kibel Mirabbi Yamna, Vishwil Kibel Mirabbi Chanino Bar Chamo. And so you find that you've got some of these, the younger Talmidim, carried on after the death of Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi, carried on with the senior Talmidim, his disciples. Yes.
I want to ask if this is significant because the more we've been studying, we've had times where there's differences of opinion between Rav and Shmuel.
Oh, yes.
And here we've got that what Rav studied with Rabbi Yonai and Shmuel studied with Rabbi Chanina.
Yes.
So can that be a source of the difference?
I suppose to a certain extent, but only to a limited extent. They themselves developed and gone into they had different views. Oh yes. And they founded different schools. Shmuel founded the school of Nador, and Rav founded the school of Surah. You see, they were different schools. All right. Yes. Rav Chibe Sifro Sifri Levairu Lehudir Ikore HaMishneh. Rav was responsible for doing the Sifro and the Sifri. Those are two very important works. The Rabbi Chio Chibiratu Sefte Levar in Yonei HaMishneh. And Rabbi Chia compiled the Tosefta to explain matters of the Mishnah. V'chein Rabbi Hoshio Bar Kapora Hebrew Brises Levar Divrei Mishnah. They compiled Brises to explain the Mishnah. Now, just let me rest there for a moment, and I want to tell you something else that developed the same time, also two streams. But these are streams in methodology, and that is all. And as far as we are concerned, methodology is very much the handmaiden of thought. Nothing more than the handmaiden of thought. But there's an interesting aspect here, and it's important. And that is, and we are coming to this now, that is, Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi took the Torah Sheba'al Peh and he made an order of it. And you know how the order is. He divided the Torah Sheba'al Peh into six parts. So those are the Shishul Sidrei Mishnah. Those are the six divisions or the six orders of the Mishnah. Now you can ask yourself the question, what was there any system before that? Surely there was some kind of a system before that. Would any of you suggest a system before that? What would be the obvious system? Yes. Exactly. And they taught the Torah Sheba'al Peh on that. Achodish Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu Lachem Lachodesh Ekono. This is the first, and there's the Torah Sheba'al Peh was taught on that verse. This is the law of Shabbos, and the Torah Sheba'al Peh was taught on the law of Shabbos. It was taught in the order of the Mishnah. You follow? In the order of the Psukim. That is how it was taught. Now, when it's taught in the order of the Psukim, yes?
Would they use the Torah when they learned? Would they use the Psukim?
Yes, they learned whether it was done exactly according to the Torah or whether it was not done exactly according to the Torah. I don't know. It might not have been done exactly to the Kodah Him. Should they use, they had to be exactly according to the Deen. This might be that it wasn't done according to the Deen. In the Torah in Shul, we know exactly how each stop of each column has got to start. It's possibly that they didn't worry about that I can't tell you. But that is the way they learned the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And sometimes in Shabbos, different Pesukim, they learned it, and it went. Rabbi Yehuda HaNosi came along and ordered it according to subject matter. You follow? For example, we are doing Noshim and we are doing Kesubas. And all that has to do with Kesubas, he put together under one tractate. That is what he did. Whether he actually wrote it down or not is something that hasn't been resolved yet. There are two distinct schools. One says that he wrote it down approximately the year 200. The other school says he didn't write it down. He only put it in order, and that is the way it was taught by Alfer. That is the way it was taught by Hartz. Till about the 6th century, and only then it was written down, or even round about the year 7. No, not 16, 17.
But the Mishnayot were only written down when the Gemarot around them were codified.
That's right. Then it was only written down. And everything was written down.
Okay, so his contribution was basically the reorganization by subject matter rather than allowing for the fact that Sukkim are taken out of context.
That's right. That's right. That was the main thing, you see. So there's still a bit of controversy about it. We'll see, the Rambam will try and decide what the Rambam's view here was, whether his view was that he wrote it down or he didn't write it down. That we will try and see. Now, when Rav did the Sifri and the Sifro, Sifro and Sifri, to do the different, we haven't got a Chumash with that in it, but what he did there was... Yes, but not with the Sikri and the Sikro and the Mechilta. That we haven't got. So, it is... No, you won't find it. You won't find it. No, that... I would know exactly. What's the reason?
I don't know. That's the table. Somebody cleared the table.
It would be with the Malbim. A Chumash with the Malbim would have it.
Okay, that's the one you have.
Have you got it?
No, he brought a Chumash for me. I take the Haftorah for his son for next week.
I did, but they're just regular Chumashim on the side there.
I think they mostly might have a Rashi with them.
That's just Rashi.
Oh, that's fine.
No, just let me see that. That's only Rashi. So you see, there was a Mechilto that was done on Shmos. And there was Sifri and Sifro that were done on Vayikro, on Mabibor and Deborim. That is done according to the Psukim. Got it? So you've got these two ways of doing it, yes?
What did you say there was on Shmos?
Mechilto. Yes. Rabbi Shmuel did the Mechilto, yes. Rabbi Shmuel did the Mechilta. In fact, I think that Rabbi Shmuel did the Mechilta before Rabbi Yehuda Anosi did the Mishnah, or very much the same time. And it would have seemed that he would have sort of developed that, but Rabbi Yehuda Anosi came and did it according to the subject matter. If you want me to take it a little bit further, and then you've got the whole, then you've got the complete picture. When it came to codifying the Gemara, the first time that the Talmud was codified was round about the year 800 by the Baal Halachos Gedolos. Don't ask me who the Baal Halachos Gedolos was. Once I possessed the Baal Halachos Gedolos, but I don't anymore. And if I remember correctly, we didn't even know the name. The edition that I happen to have, a very good edition of the Baal Halachos Gedolos, if I remember correctly, his name wasn't even mentioned there. And the Baal Halachos Gedolos was the first person that very gingerly codified the Talmud. And I want to explain to you why he codified it, why he did it so gingerly. And by gingerly I mean he just took put down laws, few laws, he did it all in one book, very gingerly. The reason was because he knew that he would be open to a tremendous amount of criticism. And the criticism is, you know, the sort of criticism that I told you about once at the shear.
Well, the German were up there.
That's not good. I tell you once at the shear. Yes, it is. You know, you can imagine what this sort of thing does to me. The Kaddish in Roman letters. this Gadol, this Gadol Shmei Rabo. Imagine what it does to me when I see this. You can imagine how much worse it is when I'm at the funeral and the son is off to say Kaddish and he reads Divro b'ol morabo shmei v'is kadash is kadal. You know what he's doing?
Yes.
This is sort of the way he's reading it. You can imagine what it does to me. You can imagine what it does to me when I hear him reading his kadal v'is kadash shmei rabo. And I think, well, it's interesting, you know, it goes from right to left at least. I wouldn't have expected it from him. So I just look over him to see what he's doing. He's got another edition of the Kaddish. No Hebrew at all. This has got the Hebrew at the top. It's only English. Well, of course, then he knows that it goes that way. Now, what do you think it does to me at least?
Question.
That is the way they felt about codifying the Talmud. Who are you doing it? For nursery schools. A nursery school needs a thing like that. But kindergartens don't need that. Kindergartens, you learn from the Gemara, you get them. You work out the din yourself. What are you reducing the Torah to? So, Bala Rokas Gedela is new. The next person who did it was the Rish Rabbi Yitzchok Alfasi. He did it, and the way he did it was, according to the Gemara, he went through the Gemara, the same system that the Gemara has. And it was very difficult to find it there, because you had to know the Gemara. If you didn't know the Gemara, you couldn't find it. But he did it according to the Gemara. You follow? Like whether you're allowed to make the first beer on Shabbos. You don't look at it for it in Shabbos, and you don't look for it in Kiddushin, but in Kesuvos. But then you've got to know the Gemara Kesuvos to know. So you know, want to know, what does the Rik say? Can you do the first beer on Shabbos, or can't you do the first beer on Shabbos? So if you know your Gemara, you know where to look for the Rik. But he did it according to the Gemara. He didn't do it according to subject matter. This was, strictly speaking, according to the Gemara. Very difficult to find. And he had tremendous opposition. When the Rif did it, he was attacked. And his greatest opponent was a man who lived in Spain. And when this man died, he sent for the Rif, he was his senior, he sent for him, and he asked him, to forgive him. He said, now he realizes how necessary it was, and therefore he said he's got so much confidence in him that he's asking him to make himself responsible for the training of his son. Why did he do that? Look what we've come down to. Things have gone bad.
Today we have a computerized importance of the Talmud.
Things have gone bad. This is what he did. The Rambam came along. The Rambam did it according to subject matter. The Rambam did with the codification of the Talmud the same as Rabbi Yehuda Anosi did with the Mishnah. He took it out of the Pesukim and he put it into an order. That was the method he worked. The Rambam comes along and he does, after the Rif, codifies according to subject matter. Also criticized very much. You can understand how far he's criticized that the Rosh comes after the Rambam and reverts back to the system of the Rif. The Rosh's son makes the tour and doesn't take the system of his father, takes the system of the Rambam. And the Shulchan Aruch comes after the Rosh's son, takes the system of the Rambam. I can take the parallels even further. I can take it right into our own days. Little less than 100 years ago, the Chofetz Chaim completed the Mishnah Berurah. This is his work. This is the Shulchan Aruch on the top, the first part of the Shulchan Aruch. He did this in 6 volumes. And this is his work. From here downwards is his work. Did a wonderful piece of words. And then he started on the second part of the Shulchan Aruch. This is the Orach Chaim. Started on the Yerodeah. When he started on the Yerodeah, a delegation came to see him. A delegation of Rabboni. And the delegation of Rabboni asked him not to do it on Yerodeah. Yerodeah is the second part of the Shulchan Aruch. The part that has to deal with kashrus, with trefers, and all that.
What was the reason?
The reason was they said to him, every layman will now take your work that you have done and he will give his own decisions. They will never come to a rav. Right? 25 years later, the same delegation came to him. Those who were dead were replaced by others. And they said, will you please do it on Yerodeah? He said, what's the change of heart? He said, now the Rabboni will lead it. Now the Rabboni will lead it. He said, I'm afraid it's too late. I can't finish it if I do it now. So he didn't do it. So we've got this work from him. I can imagine what that did to the Chofetz Chaim when he said he wrote this for the layman. When he said, when they said that the Rabbonim needed, now I can imagine what he did to the Chofetz Chaim. Imagine how the Chofetz Chaim would have felt today if the rabbis need a digest of it in English. Well, that is where we come to. So we just realize what it is, what has happened. And this started already in the times of the Romans, this great fear, what is going to happen here. But this is the foresight that they had. And so he says, "Rabbi Yochanan chiver a Gemara Yerushalmi the Eretz Yisrael Achar Churban Abayis the Korav Sholof Meir Shono." And Rabbi Yochanan, he compiled and redacted the Jerusalem Talmud in Eretz Yisrael about 300 years after the destruction of the Temple. The destruction of the of the Beis HaMikdosh was in the year 70. So the Jerusalem Talmud, the Palestinian Talmud, was finally redacted round about the year 370. Right? Rabbi Yochanan was known to be a very old man when he died. Nobody seems to know quite how old he was, but a very, very old man.
Babylonian Talmud was redacted first?
No, afterwards. Afterwards. It was completed afterwards, later. The Babylonian Talmud later, you come to it just now. Umigedole achuchom shikiblu barabu shmuel. And amongst the great ones who received the tradition from Rav and Shmuel were Rav Huna, Rav Yehudo, Rav Nachmon. We've had Rav Yehudo very often already. Rav Nachmon, Rav Kahana, Umigedole Achachomi, very often she says, Omer Rav Yehudo, Omer Rav Huna, Omer Shmuel. You've got it, then you know how the line goes. Umigedole Achachomim Shekibu Rabbi Yochanan. And on the Palestinian side, the Gedolei HaChachomim, the great ones, who received from Rabbi Yochanan, were Rabbi Bar Barchono, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Rabbi Dimi, Rabbi Ovin, And on the Babylonian side, those who received the tradition from Avuna, from Rabbi Yehuda, were Rabbi Rav Yosef. Umichlal HaChachomim Shekiblu Merabba V'Rav Yosef were Rabbi V'Rovo. We going down the generation. Ushneim Kiblu Gam Merab Nachman. Umichlal HaChachomim Shekiblu Merabba V'Rav Ashi V'Rav Vino. Umar V'Rav Ashi Kiblu Me'ovi V'Rav Ashi V'Rav Vino. So you go right down to Rovo, Rav Ashi, Rav Vino, and Mar V'Rav Ashi. And that brings you to the end of the period of the Talmud, and these Mar Rav Ashi and Ravino and Rav Ashi were the ones who were responsible for the redaction, for the final redaction of the Babylonian Talmud, which brings us approximately to the year 500.
Well, I
want to
get the beginning. Where did he start? Did he start right at the beginning?
Moshe.
You've done that already.
We've done that already. But the Rambam knew that there will be some who are very interested who miss the first part. So what he does is he says, right, I'll tell you what I'll do. He says, now I do it in reverse. Now instead of starting from Moshe Rabbeinu and coming down to he says, now we'll just reverse it. We'll start from the end and go back to the beginning. So he says, next paragraph. Nimso, so it works out. May Rav Ashi ad Moshe Rabbeinu Olivai Shalom Arboim Doros, that from Rav Ashi, if you work it back to Moshe Rabbeinu, is 40 generations. But Elohim, Rav Ashi got it from Rova, the Rova Merabo, the Rabo Merabhuna, the Rabhuna Merab Yochanan, the Rab Ushmue, the Rab Yochanan, the Rab Ushmue, the Rabbeinu Akkodesh, Rabbeinu Akkodesh, the Rab Shimon Oviv, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Gamliel Oviv, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Oviv, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Gamliel Azokin Oviv, Rabbi Gamliel Azokin, Rabbi Shimon Oviv, Rabbi Shimon, Mehilel Oviv, Veshamai, Mehilel Veshamai, Mishmai Vavtalio, Mishmai Vavtalio, Mehuda Vishimon, Mehuda Vishimon, Yeshua ben Prachig, Mite Arbeli, the Yeshua Benite is me Yosef ben Yer, Yosef ben Yochanan, Yosef ben Yer, Yosef ben Yochanan, Antignos, Vantignos Mishimon Atzadik, Mishimon Atzadik me Ezra, the Ezra me Boruch, Uboruch me Hirmio, now we're coming to the prophets, the Hirmio me Tzafanyu, Tzafanyu me Chabakuk, the Chabakuk me Nochum, the Nochum me Yoel, the Yoel me Micho, Micho me Yeshaya, the Yeshayohu me Amos, the Amos me Hosea, the Hosea me Zachario, Uzachario me Yahu Yodov, Yahu Yodov me Elisho, the Elisha me Eliyahu, the Eliyahu me Achio Achileni, the Achio me David, the David me Shmuel, Ushmuel me Eli, the Eli me Pinchos, Upinchos me Yeshua, the Yeshua me Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, from whom did he receive the Torah? Me Pi Hagevuro, from the Rabbeinu Shoelim himself. Nimtzo Shekulo me Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Ya is the slug word.
What?
Can you translate this?
Here it is.
Nimtzo shekulom me'Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So it works out. Each one of them got it from Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Got it from the Rebbe. That is the Torah min haShemayim.
That's 40 generations.
40 generations.
And the one most recent to us
stopped
at what date?
About 500. Now from 500 to 1,000, it's child's play. That's the period of the Gonim, we know exactly. And from the period of the Gonim to the Rishonim, it's child's play. We know who the Rambam's teacher was. We know who the teacher of the Rambam was. We know who the teacher of the Rambam was. It's the Rif. And we know who the Rif's teachers were. It was Rabbeinu Chananel and Rabbeinu Nissim. And we know the teacher of Rabbeinu Chananel and Rabbeinu Nissim. We go right. And from the Rishonim, we go right up. We go right to the Vilna Gaon. From the Vilna Gaon, we know exactly how it goes. Right up till the day before yesterday. Day before yesterday. So we know exactly we know exactly, right through today, we know exactly who it is. But please, gentlemen, remember that as soon as a person is given an official position, he can no longer be the custodian of the Torah, and he can no longer be the guardian of the Torah, and he can no longer be the world authority on the Torah. That can only go to a person whose whole life is Torah and who is under no pressure from anybody and is under no obligation to anybody. Once there is any kind of obligation, he can't be an authority.
What do you mean obligation?
Like a political.
You mean like the political pressure?
Political pressure. Look here, yeah. I got you the job. I want to say.
Well,
is a Rosh Yeshiva, would you call that an official position?
No. Unless he's a Rosh Yeshiva.
No, unless
he's a Rosh Yeshiva that's appointed by a committee. But if you get a Rosh Yeshiva, the Ponvijarov was a Rosh Yeshiva.
Yes. The Bureau of Rebbe, will you consider him a custodian of the Torah?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. Even the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
What do you
mean? The Lubavitcher Rebbe, he's got a president,
mm-hmm.
and he sends for the president, he comes here, he says, will you explain yourself? I'm not satisfied.
Power.
He says, I don't accept that. I'll appoint another person. You go. You go. They don't need you anymore. I'll appoint another person. That's all right. But once he is there, and he's told what to do, and he's told he's got to toe the line, and he receives an invitation to a certain place, he's got to accept it. He's got to, after all he represents, he's got to go. And if the Prime Minister wants to see him, he says, please come and see me in my office. When Ben-Gurion wanted a decision, there, the Goru Hador was, the person who was the custodian of the Torah in those days, was the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish lived in Bnei Brak. So Ben-Gurion went down to Bnei Brak and he discussed with the Chazon Ish, and then he went back again.
That's Ben Gurion's unique personality.
that today Begin would call the rabbi to him.
Depends who?
Gordon.
Gordon is appointed. He's appointed.
Mm-hmm.
Once a person is appointed, he hasn't got that. Nobody. He will take it out of there.
It strikes me also that another reason for that. That way he proves his custodianship by his knowledge and not by the fact
that only that he, by his knowledge, by his piety, by a complete non-existence of any discrepancy between his knowledge and his piety, he rises head and shoulders above anybody else, he is the authority. Never accepted. The Chofetz Chaim was the authority. I mean, this is our day still. Chofetz Chaim was the authority.
The authority.
His day was the biggest authority. Nobody questioned the Chofetz Chaim. He was a baker. He was a baker. Until he gave the job up. And he didn't, it wasn't the case that the job gave him up. It was, he was the type of person whom the job gives up, he would never have been a great authority. He gave the job up. And then he made his money only from his living, only from writing Sforim. So he said his Sforim, after that, brought him much more than he needed. He brought him everything he needed and kept the whole yeshiva going. She been right and kept from that. That's the way he did it.
Rabbi?
Yes.
The 40 generations of learning that are accounted for here.
Yes.
Do I understand that from that point on,
It differs in the...
Oh, dear, that's the next paragraph. There's a big, big change from that.
We'll point. Get to it.
That we've got to discuss there. There's a very big change from there.
Rabbi, would you say, is it generally true that even to be the head of a Hasidic court or to be the head of a yeshivot, you say that is always completely pure and devoid of politics?
Well, you know, I don't know these places, you see.
I'm thinking of the Gitter Rebbe that we have now, who is politically different from his predecessor.
Well, I don't know enough about it. You know, I don't belong to those schools.
To the Hasid,
I belong to a different school.
You're in the...
I belong to quite a different school.
I understand.
I come down from the door.
So that we do meet next thing.
David, have you got a...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, David.
I'm sorry.
Gentlemen, will you excuse me if I take my jacket off? It's getting quite and we're a
bit t-shirt.
Okay.
Let's put it on.
Now we are I have got to get try to move on today. I just want to get a favorite. I promised you these things. David E. Just let me see. This is it, yes. Thank you, please. May I make a request to you? And that is, if you could help me, have you done this tomorrow already? If you could help me just to get back into my stride. Because we've had a break, and it's not easy to get back into one's stride if it would just assist me. Start from the bottom of page Vovomidbeis. Mosiv Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami asked the following question. We have learned how Mephis Murs of a Shabbos Im Lasos Lo Peh Chayiv Ve Im Lahutzi Mimeno Lecho Is Potu. Now we've learned as follows in Masichta Shabbos. A Murso is an abscess or a boil. No, Shabbos.
I think it might be more of a circus. What's the gimel? What's the gimel?
No, not the gimel.
Shabbat Kavlov, right? So it has to be in Shabbat Kavlov, Shabbat, the whole subject matter.
The 13th Perek in Shabbos. The end of the 13th Perek in Shabbos. And this is the price.
Rabbi Ami says, Mosif Rabbi Ami asks from a Braise, Hamefis Mursa B'Shabbos, if a person lances a boil on Shabbos. So now there are two ways in which to lance a boil. The one way to lance a boil is to lance it. And the purpose of lancing it is to get out the pus. There's another way to open a boil, and that is not to lance it, but one takes a needle and one usually puts it into a flame in order to sterilize it, and then one pricks the boil and one enlarges the hole and makes a nice hole. And the idea of that hole is to let it drain. Those are the two ways one does. The one is to lance it in order to take out the pus, and the other one is to prick it in order to drain it. And it's just simple that the type of boil that you are going to, all you've got to do is to get out the pus, and it's not going to make any more pus, you lance it. But the type of boil that the pus is going to continue for a couple of days still, you will do it the second way in order to drain it. Now, Hamefis Mursa B'Shabbos, if one makes a hole in a Mursa B'Shabbos, one lances or one pricks a boil on Shabbos, Im La Asos Lo Peh Chai. The im lahutzi mimeno lecho is potter. If he does it in order to get out the pus, but what does he do? He makes a pef, so he is doing it. He is im lahutzi lo pef. If he makes it in order, he pricks it in order that there should be a pair. A pair means a mouth. That is, that the pus should be able to drain from the boil. Not, it's not a lancing, it's a draining it. Im lasos lo pair chai, then he will be chai. The im lahutzi mimeno lecho potu. But if he lances it to get out the lecho, that he is not liable for. So on Shabbos, if he does it in order to make a pair, he is liable, but if he does it in order only to get out the pus, for that he isn't liable. What do we see? Why is he chayiv if he makes a pair? That is, it's got to be one of the Lamed Tes Melochas, it's got to be one of the 39 Melochas. That Melocha is being. So it makes, if there is no window here at all, no window, this is a solid wall, and we decide one Shabbos that we want to, this isn't good enough, we get no air, we get no light, and we decide on this Shabbos we're going to open up here and make open it, get in air. Is that permitted or is it prohibited on Shabbos?
Prohibited.
Why is it prohibited?
But
it's a kalkeil?
But it's not.
It's not. You're improving the building.
Are they pardon?
It's not
so much as it's not the kalkeil, it's masake. So even if I don't make a proper window, but I make a nice hole here for the to get in air, that air must come in and air must be get out, I'm the sake. I'm improving it. I'm doing something to it. that is building. Now, the theory is, the thesis is, that building can be even as far as a body is concerned. You follow? If a plastic surgeon is doing an operation to a person, that's binyan. Even as far as, and the proof we've got is because it says in the Torah that the Rabbeinu Shleimam took a rib out of Odom HaRishon, or he took the side out of HaRishon, depending how we translate the word Selah, and by either, and he built it into a woman. So we see that with regard to human flesh and human sinews and human skin, that is also regarded as being. Does that make it clear? Yes.
Do we assume that there is some medical need for this?
That doesn't matter. You see, if it would be a place that it is a sakana, he might die from it if you don't do it. But then, of course, then it's forbidden. But we're not speaking about a case like that. He wants to drain it. He can't go about with a boil. It looks bad. So he makes a nice hole and it drains. And tomorrow it's going to continue draining. That is what he does. Now, just let us get this right. So, the Gemara says, Hamet is Mursa be Shabbos, Im Latos lo Peh. If a person opens a boil on Shabbos, if the idea is to make it a nice opening that it will be able to drain, that air will be able to come in and pus will be able to go out, or pus will be able to go out and air will be able to come in, Chayim. There he's liable. He's done something wrong. But if he does it only in order to take out the pus, he is potter. Let us just do the Rashi on this paraisa, and then we've got it clear. Hamesis Mursa, says Rashi, 3.5 lines from the bottom of the page in the Rashi. Hamesis Mursa, says Rashi, Apuseach Peh Nofach Shekolin Klu. If a person makes an opening to a boil, shekolim klug is probably an old French word. I've no idea what it means. Im lasos lo peshim is kavin le yapinso. His kavone is to make it aesthetically presentable. Because he's seen it, he's got a big boil on his hand here. He doesn't want it to look ugly. So he makes it that it looks very nice. And he wants his opening to be an opening for draining the pus, not only for today, but for tomorrow also. Chai. He's liable. Shehu mesaken Pesach, because he has made an opening. V'chayiv mishum bonet. And he is liable because of bone, because of building. That is the Meloch on Shabbos. Says Rashi, the Ashkochon Binyon Bevale Chaim. Because we find in animals, we find the idea of building. This is also called building. You see, by Hevel es Asela, because it says, and he built the rib. He built the rib, or he built the side. So we find that this is binyan, so this is the law of binyan. But yes, ma'am?
Is the word the ashkechon?
Because we find. Ashkechon is because we find. Martin, are you with me? Because we find. So, we've got to find out now, how does it relate to the question under discussion? The question under the discussion is, the
making the first beer on Shabbos. And Gary says, if it is to make a Pesach, if it is the Hutzi Mimeno Leicho, if he makes it only to get the Leicho out, that's his whole idea, then it is permitted. So in the case of the Vesulo, it should also be permitted, because all he wants to get out is the Dam Vesuli. So it should be permitted. Answers the Gemara. But let's finish the Rashi at the top of that page. Potur b'kaimelon potur mutur lechachilo. He says, it says that he is not liable, and the Gemara says, and Rashi says, it means not only that he's not liable, but it means that it is permitted ab initio to do. So this he's allowed to do. So if he would come to a rob and he would ask a shayla, and he would say, I've got a boil, and I want to prick it and make an opening in order that the pus should go out, that is permitted. So the question that the Gemara asked, and this is the question that Rabbi Ami comes, he said, in that case, it should be permitted to make the first beyond Shabbos. There shouldn't be any question about it, because that's what he wants. He wants to take out the Dam Vesuli. Answers the Gemara, Holsom Pokit. I'm sorry, just let's finish that right in the top of the page. Kasha Lamanda also. The Kasha is according to the person that says it is not permitted to make the first beyond Shabbos. The Hainami Lahutzi Damu. Because the idea of making the first bio is to take out the Dam Vesuli. He wants to take out the Dam Vesuli. So in the same as it's permitted to do this, it should be permitted to do the first bio on Shabbos. And the answer we get, slowly with me, and the answer we get is a very nice answer. Answer to the Gemara. Wholesome Poki the Opi. He says there is a difference between the pus in a boil or in an abscess and the Dam Vesuli in a woman. He says there, in the case of the pus, it is pocky, it is collected together in one place, but it's got nothing to do with the rest of the body. It doesn't belong to the bloodstream. In fact, it is there, it must be expelled. It's not there, it's not even in the bloodstream. But in the case, hoho, in the case of the Dam Vesuli, in the case of the blood, pokir, below okir, it is gathered together there. But you can't say that it is completely, it's got nothing to do with the body whatsoever. If it has nothing to do with the bloodstream, it would become putrid.
What is okir?
Okir. It's taken out.
Uprooted.
Uprooted from.
See,
so the pus is uprooted from the body.
Pocket.
It's been expelled from the body. And pocket is gathered together. It's gathered together in one place. Rashi explained it in the previous version of a pocket piece. So this is the interesting distinction that the Gemara makes between the pus in the abscess and the Dam Vesuli in the woman. Is that quite clear? The Dam Vesuli is connected with the others. True, it is gathered there, but it's got some connection with the bloodstream. Might be a very faint connection with the bloodstream. It's possible that the capillaries are thinner than the capillaries of any other part of the body. But there is some connection. And that is the whole piece of Gemara. Just let us finish the Rashi on that. Kashya Lamanda also the Anamina Sidamu also the Gemara holds on there, Gabi Lecho, in the question of the past. Pokit konus beyachad, it is gathered together, but okir kula mina boso, and it is
uprooted completely from the flesh of the body of the man, of the person. The omed lo tzeis. And it is there because it's got to go out. It's got to go out there. It's just waiting because it must go out. Oho, dam besurim. Here in the question of the blood of besurim, pokid uve lo okir lagamri. It is pokid, it is gathered together, but it is not completely rooted out from the rest of the elo nivla katsaspi katsoli. But if the blood is a little bit at least absorbed into the walls, afar picha eina mechuba, although it isn't completely joined, kisha ar dam ha'evorim, it's not part of the bloodstream to the extent that all the blood in all the blood in the liver, but not to that extent, elo konus, but it is collected together. It is compared as if it's still part of the body because it's not the same of pus. Pus, we've just got to get out. The dumb surim, if he wants to be a beer, the time comes that she's got to be a woman, that's a different question. But it must be expelled from the body. That's not, it's not like the past. That is the distinction that is made. And it's a very clear distinction. We've got the whole thing very clear. No trouble about it. So from there, we haven't got it. From there, Gemara makes a distinction. It's possible that to make the first B on Shabbos wouldn't be permitted. We don't know yet. Yes? From where would you like me to do the Rashi? Hosom, Hakam. Hosom, last Rashi on the second line.
Okay,
that'll be all right. Well, then I'll do it. Translation, but no explanation. That's really what you want. You want to get the meaning of the word. That's right. Hosom de gabi lecho, with respect to the pas, pokid. What does pokid mean? Konus beyachad. It is collected together. The okir, and it's uprooted. The okir kulo, and all of it is uprooted. Min habosor, from the flesh, the omed lo tzeis, and it stands to go out, it's ready to go out. Ho ho, here, dam besulim, that is with the blood of the besulim. Pokid hu, it is collected in one place. Velo okir lagamri, but it is not completed, rooted up. Elo nivla, that it is absorbed. Ketzas a little because solim in the walls. Af al pi, although she ain't a mechuber, it isn't joined. Kisha ardam, as the rest, ahoivori, as the rest of the blood of any of the limbs or members of the body, elokonus, but it is collected. Mihu, nevertheless, domeli mechuberu. It is very like as if it is joined to the body, because it's not ready to go out like pus is. That is the whole thing. Right? And now let us get down to the next piece of Gemara, which introduces a very important and a very interesting subject. But before we get to that piece, there's just a little piece of other Gemara that we've got to do. Amri, Rabbi Ami, the second line in the Gemara. Rabbi Ami, Shoro le Mival bidechilo b'shas. Rabbi Ami permitted the first beer to take place on Shabbos. Now we get to. You're getting the feel of it already. You remember Rabbi Shmuel, according to the school of Rav, they said, Rav said it was permitted to do the first beer on Shabbos, and Shmuel said it wasn't permitted. according to the school of Shmuel, they said Shmuel said it was permitted to do the first Yom Shabbos, and Rav said it wasn't permitted to be the Shabbos. We see already how it is going. Rabbi Ami Shoro Lemivar Betechila B'Shabbos. Rabbi Ami permitted. The word Shoro is the same as the Hebrew Hittir. It's the Aramaic for permitted. Rabbi Ami Shoro Lemivar Betechila B'Shabbos. Rabbi Ami permitted to do the first beyond Shabbos. Amri Le Rabbona, said the Rabbonim to him, the whole Lo Kesiva Kesubasa, but the Kesuba hasn't been written. Omer Lehu, he said to them, At Kesuha Metalkli. Then they take hold on her behalf of movable property. Now, I've got to explain to you what this means and what it's speaking about. Rabbi Ami said it is permitted to do the first Beyon Shabbos. That means on Friday night, you can do the first Beyon Friday night. So if you can do the first Beyon Friday night, when is the wedding day to take place? That doesn't mean to say the wedding can take place on Wednesday night or Wednesday. It's going to take place on Friday. The wedding is going to take place on Friday. Now, how are you going to do this that the wedding takes place on Friday? Are you going to make the wedding at 10 o'clock in the morning and then have a Suda Erev Shabbos and then again in the night time? And in winter it's already 5 o'clock in Shabbos? That's not the way you're going to do it. The way you're going to do it is you're going to have, when everybody's already dressed for shul, then you're going to have the chuppah. That's the way you're going to do it. And the se'uda will be the Friday night meal, will be the se'uda. You all understand what I'm saying? David, you understand what I'm saying? Friday night will be the se'uda. And then after the se'uda, the beer is that Friday night. Works out very nicely, except for one thing. You've got to have a kesuba. Now, to have a kesuba, not to have a kesuba, he's not allowed to make a beer without a kesuba. If a woman hasn't got a kesuba, he can't make the beer. Yes, of course she can. But it doesn't work quite as simply like that. First of all, the kesuba has got to be written correctly. So the person who writes the kesuba must know how to write the kesuba. And if a person knows how to write a kesuba, he's very careful how he writes a kesuba. And if he's careful how he writes a kesuba, it takes a long time. And if he makes a mistake, he corrects it. And sometimes he spoils the parchment, so he wants to write another kesuba. It comes Shabbos and the kesuba isn't there yet. This is a little bit dangerous.
So far, it's no different from any other.
No, the only thing is, if the chuppah starts half an hour later because the kesuba isn't altogether ready, it's not such a tragedy. But if the chuppah starts, you can't get it ready. All right, so you say to the scribe, you go and write, and we're going to do the chuppah in the meantime. He does it, but by the time it's all finished, he comes running we can't sign it anymore, we can't do it, it's Shabbos already. What do we do?
There's a non-renewable resource, the virginity.
Pardon?
There's one thing that's non-renewable here, that if he has the biyah,
yes,
the non-renewable resource is the woman's virginity, which then he wants to come with the tanat b'turin,
yes,
then she's in trouble. She isn't covered with the ketubah, right?
Well, not really. Not really. Because even if he's got a kesuba, there's no assuming she doesn't get 200 in that won't really work out that way. So the question is, the Gemara says, but this is too dangerous. That's the question. This is too dangerous to permit the first year to take place. That means that you can be without a kesuba. Amri le Rabbonon, says the Rabbonon to Rabbi Ami, the whole of Kesiva Kesubosa, but the Kesuba hasn't been written. Omar Lehu, he said to them, At the Suho Metalkin. Now this I've got to explain to you. At the Suho Metalkin means, the Kesuba first of all
when a man writes a kesuba for a woman and he gives her that kesuba, or when the kinyan is made on her behalf of the kesuba, it means that all his immovable property, what do they call immovable property in California?
Real
property. His real property is mortgaged to the kesuba. Have you got it? His karka is meshubet to the kesuba. That means that if after they've lived together happily for 75 years, and then he dies, and she comes with a kesuba, and I said, but there's nothing in the estate. She said, how am I going to do? So they go back to the records of 75 years ago, and they find that when he got married, the date of the kesuba says that when he got married, the records show that he had a beautiful building on Wall Street, New York. Fine, don't have to worry. They go to the owner of the building in Wall Street and they say, you know, there's a mortgage on that and it's now become payable. Said, how much is it? I've come to $20,000. Please, don't even need a copy. $20,000. Just go ask my secretary for $20,000 right out of check. Say the mortgage, just you fix it up there. Yes, it is. If he doesn't want to do that, they say, well, right, we take the building, we sell it, we take our $20,000 and we give you what's over. Belongs to you. We don't want any profit on it. We give it to you. That's the way it's worked. So that is what a kesuba is. Now, she is going to be married and he's not allowed to live with her if she hasn't got a kesuba. So what is she, what are we going to do here? Says Rabbi Ami, it's very simple. We give her movables to cover the issue as a pledge. So she's got movables as a pledge. And now they will write the kesuba on Saturday night or Sunday, they write the kesuba. In the meantime, it doesn't mean to say she's got a pledge, he holds it.
Excuse me, just to put a good crimp on business deals, if I wanted to buy the major piece of property that a man owns,
yes,
reasonably old,
yes,
I could know to a reasonable certainty that it's very likely that after paying full price for the property,
yeah,
they're going to come after me on this mortgage.
If you come and you get it, you pay less accordingly. Take a chance. Say, how much is this worth? That's paying business. You and this business, you know, isn't it?
Well, usually speaking, when you make a deal like that, you usually have statements stating what liens there are against the property. Is the kesuba part of the lien?
Of course. In England they've got a very strange law there. There is property in England that is what they call leasehold as opposed to freehold. I think it's something that's magical anyway. So what it means is that you can only buy it for 99 years. By the time the person buys it, somebody's already had it for 79 years, so the most he can get is only for 20 years. Well, of course, he pays accordingly. He's not going to pay a full price for it. He pays accordingly. That's the way in business it works. Yes,
we're told in the Oraita, Va'aretz lo timacher v'tzmitut, so yeah, we have...
Also got the same thing. If you just look at the Rashi on At Fesua Metautli, and then I'll explain it. At Fesua Metautli says Rashi, the meaning of that is Tenulo Metautli in Tafas Yoda Bamashka. Give her Metautli, that is, give her movables. Give her a few Kruger rands,
You tapped off after you're halfway through. Who's good?
Dagas Yoda, in their position, the Mashkin as a pledge, Le Shibud Kesuboso, a mortgage to, a fixed or mortgage to her, serving is the word, serves to her Kesubo. Until they will write a document for as her kesuba, for served by real. What do they call it?
Real property.
Real property. Served by real property. That is. Now you can relax for a couple of minutes now, and I'll just explain to you why it's so important for her to have a kesuba. Yes.
What did you do with this
mobile phone?
I presume
it was Shabbos, so... Oh, this Shabbos you can have. Even coins you can handle with Shabbos. It's not currency, really. But he might give it a gold watch.
Uh-huh.
And a real gold watch today is an expensive item. He might give it two gold watches. Oh, yes. Okay. He might have links, gold links. All these are good things today, you see. Things are quite a lot that he can give her. And he says, you keep that. Might have a very choice. He might have a couple of diamonds, one diamond, a white diamond, a blue diamond, a flawless diamond, or even flawless. All these things are worth a lot of money. And he gives her that, and that is she keeps. But what I've got to discuss with you is another problem. And now you can sit back for a moment. And that is, why is it so, why should it not be permitted to have a, that there can't be a bill?
Literally.
I'm sorry, I didn't speak so fast to this.
No, it's okay. I'm fine. You can kill us yourself sitting here.
The Torah, as we've learned in the previous Gemara when we did the Takonah for the Bnei Yisrael, the Torah is very concerned about the welfare of a Jewish daughter. Very concerned about it. It's concerned about her feelings. Very concerned about it. Concerned about her kovod, the kovod of a Jewish daughter. And the attitude that is always taken is, a man doesn't feel these things as much as a woman does, and therefore special attention must be paid to the woman. The Torah is very concerned about the welfare of a woman, welfare of a Jewish daughter. Now, the girl is always at a disadvantage vis-a-vis the man. The woman is always at a disadvantage vis-a-vis the man. Let us say, in a primitive society that we have in California, what happens, isn't marriage, we think it doesn't exist. So what happens, a man lives with a woman, and they haven't got the kid. She lives with a woman, she becomes pregnant, what does he do? Of course. You think I didn't bother for this? I don't have to put up with this. Why don't you find there's somebody else? He's off. She's left pregnant.
She has an abortion. In California.
She doesn't want an abortion. She's left with a child. She works.
comes a time she can't work anymore. So she looks tired. She's got to go back to work again. Who's going to look after the child? She's got to carry the child to work, look after the child, got to feed the child, got to clothe the child, got to educate the child. She's a tough time. It's only difficulty. Torah says a woman has got to be provided. So the first thing before they are married, the provisions, all this has got to be clear. They've got to be certain that she's provided. But it goes very much further. And this is the whole point. If a woman lives with a man and she feels insecure, she's afraid what can happen. She can have a child and she's left on her own. He doesn't worry about it. Does she give herself to the man entirely, or does she give herself with reservation? As soon as she gives herself to the man with reservation, that's already bordering on Zeus, on prostitution. That's already bordering on prostitution. That she has a beer with a man and she's not certain. So I don't know what can be here. And she's insecure. That's all we know. She's got to be absolutely secure. And that is the basis of this. Can't be without a decision. To such an extent that even if it's a pilegish, think the Rambam paskens that a pilegish must also have a pursuit. Pilegish we can't be done. All right. So that is that piece of command. Yes.
Did you learn from here though that if somebody's married, the woman loses the ketubah if she has the talpaling?
Then they can be lived together. If she loses the ketubah and she hasn't got any metalpaling, then she goes to the prophet and the rabbi, who will see to it that she gets what is known as a ketubah de ilchosah. That means a replacement ketubah. And you write the replacement ketubah and she's got that.
But until that time, she's metalpaling sufficient.
That's right, we do that. Give her metalpaling. Give her metalpaling from this tomorrow. What if you want to ask Selwyn? A prostitute, is a harlot, and a concubine. I mean, this is, she knows that she hasn't got any other man. She hasn't got any other man. This is the only man that she's got. She's his mistress, but she's his official mistress.
Long term.
And his wife knows that she's got, he's got her. His wife knows. But his wife is his wife. That is a pilegish. It's not quite a
pilegish. Is there a Jewish pilegish?
He does. He's got Shlomo, Shlomo, how many do we have altogether?
1,000. You have 700 of one kind and 300 of another.
700 wives and 300 pilegish.
I'm not saying. Is a Jewish woman allowed to be a pilegish? Is what I'm asking.
That's why in your country,
you see, today not, because today is coming under the chedim of Rabbi Nagash. So today, a man is not allowed to have a pilegish, and he's not allowed to have a. But this deen of Rabbi Nagash, that if the Yaakov of Emden is Scottish, a shayla of Shiva on it, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden is very unhappy about it. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that women would be better off without this they are with it. Because they would be more in demand. And you see that women are more in demand, then the standard of morality is higher. You see, if it were permitted for a man to have more than one wife, you see, then there would be more men than women about. And a woman wouldn't just go and give herself to a man, you know, she says, I'm not prepared to marry yet. In a civilized society, I'm speaking. It's married here, otherwise not. Well, in fact, it's not only the Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that. Have you ever heard of a man, W.H. Leckie? No, he's not that. No, that's not from Kenya. W.H. Leckie. He was the great authority in the 19th century on a European model. And he wrote a work called The History of European Morals from the time of Charlemagne.